I'm actually happy I got that no.
Roy, I mean, I still am looking for no's.
Exactly.
I prefer no to yes.
I agree.
I really do. I'm incredibly motivated by both, which is why I'm motivated.
The Gary V audio experience.
Vayner Nation, good morning, good evening, good afternoon, happy travels. Hope the dog walking is going well, the treadmill, whatever you're doing as you're listening to this. Very exciting episode for me. I had a very substantial hypothesis when the NFT space kind of kicked off in my brain a little over a year, maybe even a year and a half ago. One of the things that stood out to me is the real world and the digital world. I have a big belief that a lot of our collectibles will be sent to warehouses and we'll be trading NFTs. And then one of the biggest bets I made in kind of my big investing era of last summer was into Tom Sachs Rockets, because Tom was a very successful artist. Danny Cole was an emerging artist in real life that I fell in love with, and that's why I went heavy on creatures. And many of the people that I have supported do physical art and then put out projects. But me, as many of you know that have followed me, and I've talked a lot about this, me as a non-physical art collector or enthusiast or aficionado has, you know, ironically been sucked into caring a little bit more about real art, which has been fun. But along my journeys over the last 15 years, there was, you know, kind of one artist that I was aware of that I kind of watched from the sidelines grow his, you know, demand, his reputation, watched him move. We shared a very, very, very close friend to both of us named Eitan Sugarman, who owns Hunt and Fish Club and White Horse Tavern. And, you know, people that listen to this podcast may know the boy from New York in my social content, things of that nature, and his content. And so I would call it a second row seat to watching Roy build his career over the last decade. And when he hit me up a couple months ago and said, hey, I'm entering this space with his friend Mike. And I was like, this is just so exciting for me. It allows me to really kind of, you know, support him, to be frank, because I've always wanted to, but I tend to be pretty authentic. I buy the things I like, NFTs I like. And so what I really want to focus on in this podcast with Roy is for all the artists out there that are in the physical realm who continue to hesitate or are in the process of strategizing, getting into this space. And I hope it's also an inspiration for others who may not have even gotten commercial success in their physical art world, but are not realizing that maybe NFT land is an opportunity for them to expand their fan base. And more importantly, and I want to get into this with you, Roy, their creativity. So without further ado, that's the setup of why I'm personally so excited for this. Roy, why don't you tell everybody who you are and what you do, and then we'll get into it.
Well, thank you, Gary. I'm an artist. I've been doing it since I'm a little kid. Grew up in Israel and Jerusalem. Pretty much the way I got to New York is through a student exchange program. I studied in Cooper Union. And then I stayed here in New York. I was focusing, building my career here. I thought New York is one of the greatest city to really and give a stage to artists, and the sky's the limit over here. And that's why I'm here. I tried to make my art in different places around the world, but I feel like New York is the best spot to create it. So I've been painting all my life. So,
what is your earliest memory of painting?
Earliest memory of my painting is actually seeing my father when I was probably 4 years old, 5 years old. See my father starting a painting from a white canvas completely and then bringing life to the canvas and painting. I remember he painted like clowns, and I was like really impressed about that. And that was fascinating to me. So my father stopped painting when I was around that age. He stopped painting because, you know, living in Israel, it was difficult back then to make a living. Yeah. And when he had me and my brothers, and we are four brothers, he had to find like
quote unquote real job.
A real job, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So it kind of like seeing that was always fascinating to me.
By the way, real quick, I'm sorry to interrupt. Yes. Uh-huh. One of the biggest things that I'm excited about, when I wrote Crush It in 2008, I was excited that people that had hobbies, they liked Star Wars, they liked honey, they liked sneakers or rock climbing, that they were going to be able to become an influencer on YouTube and make a living. For me, no question, one of the biggest things about the NFT space is your father didn't get to live out probably his true calling, right? You know, I think about your father. I think about what this NFT space means. You know, too many people focus on wild commercial success, millions. I think about thousands, meaning if NFTs existed at this time when your father was at that age, maybe 5 years before then, he might have been able to build a little bit of a following, and he might have been able to be a gentleman who made a couple $100,000 a year selling NFTs, and that would have provided for his family, and he could have lived his dream instead of getting a real job, which I'm sure when you're an artist, when you're a painter, and that's in your heart. There's no job you're going to get that's going to fulfill your soul the same way, no matter how much you even stumble on something else you like.
I agree 100%. And I think, you know, it takes me also to another, if you look at movements in art, because I see that this NFT, what's going on right now, I see it as a movement, a new movement in art. It wasn't any movement for a while. And the reason I'm saying it is, you know, a lot of artists was leaning on conceptual art, pop art, different kind of movements. But in our generation, like, it wasn't a major movement in that. And the reason I'm saying movement is because,
Was the last big movement like graffiti?
I would say, yeah, street art was like the thing. But if you think about it, Basquiat was doing it back then. Then what happened is, I think people, right, artists needs to stick to their own, you know, agenda and create whatever they create. Because once you have like that big movement and you know the top artists in the game leading that, that's kind of like an issue, because you don't have a piece of the cake, you're just enjoying the crumbs. But what I see right now with what's going on with technology right now, if you compare it to movement back then you had like 10, maybe 20 artists sitting together, thinking about an idea and a concept behind their movement. They're all working on the same kind of work. And then now you can have, because of technology, the outreach is huge. You can have tens and tens of thousands of people creating that movement. They're all inspired, one each other. And I think it's incredible, because the opportunity is huge, the movement is huge, the community is huge, and that's where I'm coming right now from. I want to create, when I'm doing this NFT project right now, I want my community, I want to be there for my community. I want you know, answer questions. I want to, you know, have like a nice boxing with somebody, just to understand and.
You mean verbally? When you say boxing, you mean, you know, bouncing ideas off each other, challenging each other. Yes,
correct,
I understand
correct.
Roy, I want to go back further. I want to really make this for the artists today, more than maybe the NFT enthusiasts, which have gotten plenty from me. So your father, you remember very early your father. So then you, by 6, 7, 8, are you just painting?
Yes, I've been painting.
And do people say to you within your family and outside your family, hey, you're good? Does it like happen right away for you at a young age?
So I'm coming from, I'm not coming for money.
Yeah.
For me, a compliment was everything. If somebody tells your father, my parents actually support me my entire career since I'm a little kid. That was my fuel. That was my, you know, gas to continue creating. But I remember, you know, back then in Tel Aviv, you know, in Jerusalem, I've been painting all my life, right, since I'm a kid. But by the age of 16 to 18, I created my own style of work after I took inspiration from a lot of artists and worked on my technique and tried to really paint like any artist out there. And then I started creating my own stuff. I remember going to galleries, and you know, one of the galleries I went in Tel Aviv, I showed the guy the portfolio, handed it in his hand. I said, check, check out my work. What do you think? The guy flipped two pages, closed the page, and sent it back to me and said, it's not for me. So that was for me a pretty much every time I got a negative response, it actually made me even work harder and push myself harder and continue, because I didn't take no as an answer. Like, and trust me, I got a lot of no's in my career to get to where I am.
Do you remember your first no, or was that one that you just told a story the most, maybe it wasn't the first one, but it was such a aggressive no that it just sticks with you?
Exactly. That was one of them. Like, you know, you think you're putting time into something and then you get that no answer. And that's really, it's like a slap in the face. But I built so much from that, you know. I'm actually happy I got that no.
I still am looking for no's.
Exactly.
I prefer no to yes.
I agree.
I really do. I'm incredibly motivated by both, which is why I'm motivated. but I enjoy a good no. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people listening right now that think NFTs are stupid and are a scam and are a fad. And I'm incredibly motivated by knowing that right now the NFT landscape is very focused on the collectible with a little bit of utility. I know long-term the technology is more about the utility with a little bit of collectability. Exactly. But I know it's going to be here forever, just like I knew the internet and social media would be. Mm-hmm. Okay, so 16, 18, you're starting, you kind of found your style. You're going around galleries. You're getting some no's. Now tell us the first kind of commercially successful moment. What was the first moment?
So
where it wasn't just your mom and dad saying you're good.
Yeah. So I went to the army for 3 years in Israel, and I remember the first day that I got released from the army, I look in the newspaper, I just saw a flight to I said I'm going to the first flight, whatever it is. I saw a flight to France, and I went there. I went with my portfolio. Remember seeing, like, walking and seeing a very cool gallery, and went inside the gallery. It was a show of Miro. And I started handing, you know, showing people my work, trying to hustle my mom and see what people really think about my work. And all of a sudden, I met the owner of the gallery, and he got very excited. And it's like, and I was like, it's the first time that somebody really recognized my work and really loving it, and said immediately, he said, with a, you know, and I didn't speak any English back then, and all French, and we kind of communicate with our hands
and face.
Yes, and the guy told me, let's do a show together. And then I did a few shows back then. I was painting in France, and then I had to go back. So that was like a big deal for me.
How long were you in France?
I was probably a year and a half or so, creating a few very cool exhibitions. I was very, you know, I felt like I'm on top of the game. Then I got back to Israel, and I studied in Israel for Bezalel, it's an art academy. And from that point, I went to New York for a student exchange. I knew I wanted to go to New York and study here. So I studied in Cooper Union, and I invest everything I have in my art. Like, I go all in. I'm trying to do the best art that I can every time I'm doing anything. So very quickly, New York sucked all my money, and I got to a point that I had $500 in my bank account, and I was like, okay, what do I do? And I met a guy over here in New York, and he said, listen, you know, in Soho, you can put on, over the weekend, you can hang your work on the street and see what people think, and you can sell it. It's actually legal to do that back then. So I took two of my paintings, I hang them on, I remember Spring on Broadway, back then was Cafe Bari, now it's Nike Town. And a bunch of people walk and really admire the work. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then a guy came and reached over and said, listen, I'm building this restaurant in Vegas, Tao, in Vegas back then. It was Jason Strauss. And then he tells me, would you like to do my art? The art pretty much for the restaurant. And then I said, yeah, I mean, I don't know anything about Tao, no Vegas, but then I started, you know, understanding more what it's all about. And I did those art pieces for
Vegas. So wait a minute, I don't know this story. So you're telling me you're on the corner of a street because somebody tells you you can put up two paint, you can put up art.
Yeah.
You're hanging out, you're getting some good feedback for a couple hours, and then some guy comes along, looks at it, and just looks you in the face and says, do you want to do the art for me in my Vegas restaurant?
Exactly like that.
Wow. I know Jason, and so you're telling me that that moment really was a game changer.
Yes, it was. That was the big break. That was.
By the way, for anybody listening, this is why New York is New York.
Yeah.
Because the people that are walking by the street are people that are building, like, you know, restaurant empires.
Exactly.
So Jason says that.
Jesus had that.
Did you sell that? Did you sell those two paintings that day?
I did.
For how much? Do you remember?
It was probably like $500 a piece.
And you were pumped.
Yeah, I was like walking like a peacock, pretty much feeling I won the world. And
you
the
tripled
whole
your money in one day, your bank account.
And the most important, it gave me a few more months to live in New York, continue my dream. So I was like, I was always.
What year was this?
2005, I would say 2006.
And how old were you?
2005. I was 24 or 5, something like that. And, you know, putting the work in Vegas, all of a sudden, you know, I'm getting like by mail. I remember a magazine, and I see on the cover, Pharrell took a photo with, and the background is my painting in Vegas. So that was like a big deal, you know. I'm like, you know, so that's the beauty of New York. Like you said, New York, you start your day, you never know how it ends.
Yeah.
You know, so that was like.
So you did the, how many paintings did they buy for Tao?
They bought like three paintings overall.
And do you remember what you charged them?
I told them, whatever you want to give me. I don't mind. I think it was like overall nothing. It was like a few thousands. But for me, it was huge. Like for me, I don't care about the money. When I work, I don't think
you're
about this amount. I want a stage. And my recommendation for artists, no matter if you get a no in a gallery or in school, they're trying to put you in a box and all that moment, don't let it kill you. Like show your work. It can be on the street. It can be in restaurants. It can be anywhere. And now it's actually a little even easier in a way. Not easier, but more.
No, easier. I know where you're about to go. Of course, because you could DM 600 influencers who have 4 million followers and say, I like what you do. I'm an artist.
Yeah.
Do you want this painting? If you do, I'd like you to take a picture with me in your Instagram main feed and don't delete it in 24 hours. You can absolutely send that DM. By the way, people sometimes say, Gary, I need more practical advice. There you go. DM, if you're an artist, physical, you know, even NFT, don't do what a lot of spam people do, which is airdrop into influencers' wallets and then claim that they're supporting it. That happens to me. It happens to others. It's a terrible tactic. It's cheap. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But if you DM somebody physical art or NFT and say, hey, I'm a fan of your comedy. I'm a fan of your modeling. I'm a fan of your athletic ability. I'm a fan of your business advice. I'm an artist. If I'd love to give this to you, but in return, I'd like you to post it in your main feed or in your story or in your make a TikTok with it. You know, one person's piece of content can start the process, no different than Jason Strauss, but, you know, giving you a chance to hang some art in Tao.
Exactly. And then from that point, by the way, after Jason, we spoke about Ethan Sugarman. Then I met Ethan through at NEA. And I remember Ethan was opening this restaurant with Justin Timberlake. And then he saw that I'm a painter and the whole, and Ethan have, you know, gives a lot of love to art because of his grandma was big in art. And
yes,
is. So, you know, Ethan is my best friend for so many years. And I started working and doing, you know, some restaurant. Like I started to design restaurants all of a sudden and clubs and things like that. And the reason I did it, I wasn't a designer. I'm an artist. But the reason I did it is because
exposure.
I can expose it first.
It was a stage.
A stage to show my work, to put my painting as a focal point in the space. And that was my kind of like way to get in.
I actually think when I look at your career from afar again, because I would hear things from Eitan, things of that nature, like, you know, you were putting paintings and designing in restaurants that also had a lot of A-listers and influencers running through the place. Mm-hmm. I assume some of the other crazy things that happened in your career happened because those individuals first got a glimpse of your stuff in those locations.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, I met Jay-Z and Ethan's restaurant. We did like it was a cool night. I remember we had like a party. I think you were there too, by the way, back then when we
For Southern Hospitality.
Yes, Southern Hospitality. Yes.
Timberland's birthday.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. And then I saw Jay and he asked, you know, what's up and stuff. And so I started showing him a few pieces, and then he fell in love with two pieces, sent it to me immediately tomorrow to my office. So that was like another moment. And then I remember, and then, you know, basically that's how I got to work with Rihanna, because Jay-Z was collecting my two of my paintings that I sent to his office. It was in his office. And Rihanna, I remember, saw those works after she recorded album, and she went to the office and saw one of my paintings was the kid with the crown and the braille on top of that. So she saw that. She didn't ask Jay about it. She called Sierra, our creative director, and they were looking to find the artist. They find me through a gallery that I was showing in Berlin. And then she, you know, she reached over, and the guys, you know, called me, guy, Rihanna is looking for you. Can we give her your number? So I was like, yeah, of course. And then I remember recalling, and then we met, and then that's how pretty much I did the art for Rihanna's album cover. She believed in my concept, and you know, my concept is, it's all about, you know, stands for human equality. The crown over the eyes symbolizing that everybody's equal, everybody's the same, no matter where you're coming from. You know, you deserve a big chance in your life. Everybody have a dream. Follow your dream. Continue with your dream. Don't let people, you know, down you or doubt you and things like that. Just go with your dream. You deserve it. So everybody for me is equal, and that's my message through art. Saying that and give people a chance to be, you know, a part of the work. For example, in Cooper Union, I remember when I came to New York, I was overstimulated, you know, so many people in New York coming from a small town in Jerusalem, small little neighborhood. So I came and I was like, okay, I need to forget what I saw till now. So I pretty much blindfolded myself, blindfolded my eyes for a whole week. And I wanted to reborn to light, reborn in the way I think, reborn in the way I saw things before. So I started working, and the first things that came to my mind, if I want to start seriously creating art, I want to start with giving people who cannot see visual art an opportunity to enjoy art. So I started creating those, I wrote poetry and I translated it into Braille, and I sculpturing, you know, the Braille on top of the canvas, and I let people who are blind, people that lost the vision, people in visually impaired, to touch the work and experience a painting, you know, and that for me was everything, because all of a sudden
nobody was left out.
Nobody left out, exactly.
That's it. I understand. Yeah. And you know, it's funny, again, we've never really gotten a lot of time together. So even the Jason Strauss story, I didn't know. I was aware that you worked with Rihanna, but I didn't know how it all went down. I'm now pumped because I was at that party where you were this all, now I have a feel like I have a connection to it. I don't think I really understood the level of gravity behind where I think you're going with your project. I knew that when you told me you were going to do an NFT project, my brain went to the Tom Sachs place, Stephen Ray, who, you know, who's got brain vomit, Sarah Bauman, who does Women of Weapons, Mumbat, I love her work. Mm-hmm. All these physicals who went into NFT land, that has been a big thesis of mine. You know, I still believe, you know, Vito Schnabel, who I know, we did some stuff with Artificial. I still believe that the artists that are winning, emerging and are winning in the real world, have the biggest canvas, pun intended, to be successful in NFT land. You, besides Tom Sachs, you're further along in your physical art career than the other people I mentioned. You know, I just have watched you grind from afar mainly through Eitan's stories. So mm-hmm. I had a lot of confidence when you reached out and said, hey, I'm going to do this. What do you think? I have even more confidence now 25 minutes in, because I don't think I have a little bit of a sense of where you're going creatively with your project. Actually, where are you? I actually don't know this. Where are you with the project? How far away are we? And more importantly, can you build on what you just said? Because I know you're going a little bit with this crown braille thing. Explain it for me, please.
Yeah. So I guess 6 years ago, right, I've been working on technology. And one thing about technology that I want people to know is don't, like, I remember when people built, you know, you start, Photoshop came out way back. And people using those effects and filters. I was fascinating to create my own filters, my own filters to Photoshop. Now you're creating something completely new and different by doing that. So I taught myself to program and to communicate with those program. And I taught myself any program out there. So six, 7 years ago, I started to working on an idea. I spent a lot of time in Japan, back and forth, and I, you know, I knew that that you know, technology and art is a big, and it's going to get very big very soon. So I had this idea to open a museum institute over here in New York, and it's pretty much digital museum that I pretty much create my own art over there, and wanted to do something very big. Then COVID hits. And then when COVID hits, after three years of work on this specific museum here in New York, I said, you know what? What do I do now? So I had this VR set that I bought, this Oculus set. Played with that a little bit, was bored, you know, during beginning of COVID. Then I said, I want to build everything that I did for the physical museum and build it in virtual. So now in the metaverse. So now it calls metaverse. Back then it was just to create like a virtual 3D experience. Virtual, yeah. Exactly, for people to enjoy art and really walk in and see my installations. So that become metaverse right now. And then I remember Ethan calls me a year and a half ago or something, and he tells me, you know, do you know anything about NFTs? I said, I have no idea what's NFTs. He said, you know, you should Google and look into it. So it was maybe 2-3 articles out there. While I'm reading about it, I'm understanding that this is what I do right now. I'm actually working, creating a digital art, creating a metaverse, and the access to the metaverse is to do the avatars. And those are my 10,000 NFTs. My 10,000 NFTs are building a community that can come and enter to the metaverse, to the Mega Moon. The name of the metaverse is Mega Moon, and the kids are the Crown Kids, the 10,000. And the idea is
Kids are back to the crown with the braille on it that Rihanna saw. Like that's been in you for a while.
Yes. And then I want to continue with that. That's my goal. I mean, again, it stands for
You feel like that is the thing, right? So for everybody, if you don't see it, it's actually over his shoulder. If you're watching, I don't know if we're going to clip this or this is going to be all audio, but it's this golden crown with braille on it that's actually covering the eyes of the character, which I think is kind of interesting, right? Crowns normally sit on top of the head. Mm-hmm. You've got these crowns covering eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I believe that everybody is a queen. Everybody is a king. Everybody deserves a chance in art, in life, you know, working on their dream and continuing.
Is the braille going to spell out different things on the crown, or is it spell out the same thing for every of the 10,000 characters?
For this specific one, it just says all human beings are born equal in dignity and rights, that we are all the same. And that's what it says on the crown. So, but because people, you got to understand, there's no, back then, yeah, maybe it was a king, but the king was never satisfied with what they have. They always wanted more and more and more. So that's why...
That's not back then, my friend.
Yes.
Unfortunately, one of the greatest vulnerabilities in society, leading to many of the difficulties that we have around the world, not just what's going on in Ukraine, but many other parts of the world, there's an incredibly challenging game that insecure human beings can never be content or grateful for what they have. Mm-hmm. They need more at the expense of others.
Exactly.
Terrible. It's unfortunate.
It's unfortunate.
And honestly, I actually have compassion and empathy for some of the biggest villains in our world, even though they've created incredible carnage. And when I say villains, of course, everyone's going to think, you know, point to Putin and things of that nature. I'm actually going day to day. I take it day to day. Somebody's right now listening to this podcast. They're going to stop right now because they have to go into the office. It's 9 o'clock. They're going to stop it right now. They just turned us off. They're going to walk in and at 10:16 this morning, their boss is going to yell at them for dumb shit that doesn't mean anything. Yeah. And the only reason that's actually happening is not because they made a mistake on a task, but it's because the person yelling, this manager at 10:16 a.m., is deeply unhappy at home. And by the way, not because they're an atrocious person. Maybe they're unhappy because their mother has just been diagnosed or put into hospice. So they're hurt. So they're taking it out on someone else. Mm-hmm. There's challenges. We lack empathy and compassion to why someone got to a state like that. Mm-hmm. We don't think about that. I tell a lot of my friends, if you struggle with your parents, instead of being fully mad at them, take a step back and think about what their parents, your grandparents did to them. Right? You know, like we've got to be more thoughtful about this. I love the message of the crowns, brother. I love the message.
Thank you. And this is, I mean,
real quick, because I got a little bit, I was very quiet in the middle. I'm sure everyone was laughing because I tend to talk more often, but you captivated me a little bit on your vision.
Yeah.
Let's go back because I really want to bring value because I know my audience. I want to go business, even though I truly think you're an artist, but I do think I have a very big business crowd. I think this is important to me.
Yeah.
And I think you have 10, 15% business in you to go along with your art, which is why you've been successful. Otherwise you can't. So let me ask you this question.
Yeah.
Do you believe what's the name of your, do you have an actual physical, do you have a name? When is your project coming out?
It's coming out in,
I mean, obviously we release time. Yeah. I know for example, Be Friends is in April. I don't fully know. When do you think?
So the drop probably mid May, something like that.
We're gonna drop, so we'll just say May.
Drop it. Let's say May.
Do you have official name for it or not yet?
Yeah. On Twitter, we call the Megamoon _, but it's the name of the project under the Megamoon, because the Megamoon is the metaverse and the NFTs living in the metaverse. Those avatar lives in the metaverse and it's going to be the name of King, you know, Crown Kids.
Crown Kids. So talking business a little bit, do you believe that a successful Crown Kids launch in NFT land will impact your earnability in the physical world? Do you think as a businessman, which, you know, an artist needs to be a businessman or woman a little bit. Hey, Dad. Thank you.
nice.
Do you think that it will compound your physical, like a very successful NFT project allows you to charge more for your art? Your art will go up in price?
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, like I said, it's not about the money, but I assume if the project is successful, yes, it can help the physical work as well.
Do you love the Crown Kids so much? Because you obviously do other art
that
doesn't have them in there. Is there a part of you that hopes it's so successful that you can do more Crown Kids art physical, like that there'll be so much demand that will become more of what you make because you're so attached to the message? Or are you concerned that it's so commercially successful that people only want Crown Kids from you in a world where you're an artist and you want to do other shit?
I mean, it's an interesting question because I always trying to do the best, right? I always trying to do something in art. I'm trying to make art that is relevant and do make a change in art and pretty much in art history.
So you guys are doing a physical museum, NFT museum in downtown New York.
Yeah.
And the Crown Kids NFTs are going to give access to that?
Yeah, it's going to be access for early drops, for events, for talks, for lounge. Like we're building a crypto lounge that, you know, people can come in and be a part of this community.
That will open a year from today, roughly.
Yes. Yeah.
Understood.
Yeah. And in the metaverse, the metaverse is pretty much ready. We're going to release it on a 2D, like a PC game. It's going to be on an app, going to be on VR. And over there, I created like studios. So artists that, you know, could come and create their own art in the metaverse.
What I like about what you're doing, and I think this has been a huge thing that I'm struggling with. So many people see the gold rush of NFTs. So they're just making something up today and launching in 60 days. And then they're surprised why it's not doing well.
Yeah.
You know, when was the first time you made a crown kit or a version of it? How many years ago?
Oh, like I would say 7-8 years ago, it was the first. But the first crown as a painting was 20 years ago.
But right. So to me that, right. And I think, you know, as we wrap up here, for everybody who's an artist or an entrepreneur and wants to get into putting out projects into the world, I believe the reason VeeFriends is going to win is this has been on my mind actually forever. When I didn't have a canvas, pun intended, to talk about patience and kindness and tenacity and ambition and all these things that I have, I just used me, Gary Vee. I used me, the human, which was not really in my mind. I never thought of myself as a public figure. I thought of myself as a businessman, but I got to a point in my mid-30s where I was so pent up to talk about these things. 100%. I used myself as the vehicle. Now I have a universe for that vehicle. It was authentic. It's why it's going to work. Yeah. I believe the reason your project's going to work is because you're a real, commercially successful, actual contemporary artist. But more importantly, for me personally, it's the fact that the project is something that's been deep in you and has meaning. And I think for everybody who's listening, if you're going to take your first attempt, don't just hire a graphic artist to make you some PFPs. 100%. Take a step back and think about if your grandma meant something to you, or when you played hockey, it meant something to you, or a hero meant something to you, or a vision, or a passage out of the Bible or the Torah or the Quran or anything. Just does it mean something to you? Mm-hmm. It will always do better when it means something to you because you will fight for it more. If it doesn't mean anything to you, you won't fight for it because you may, for example, Roy, VeeFriends didn't sell out for the first 3 weeks. Did not sell out. Everybody now wants their thing to sell out in 3 minutes, let alone 3 hours, let alone 3 days. VeeFriends didn't sell out for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
But I fought for it because I knew I was building it forever. It didn't matter.
And look what happened now. And what I believe also, when you create an image, that image needs to stay in your mind. So if you close the computer, you close your screen, and that image stays in your mind, right, means that you did something. And I feel like what you did with the sketches that you made, I see the black cat. I see all the figures that you made stuck in my mind. Because you have it in you, you came and did it naturally yourself. Correct. Spending time doing
everybody, yeah, a lot of people made fun of me because the art isn't great. And for me, I was laughing because the art is so provenance to me. It is me. I took the week, you know, I took a long time thinking about it and I took the week to create it.
Yeah.
And it was important to me that the first version was me from my heart, my 100%. Soul, my fingers.
Yes.
And I think authenticity and provenance matters so much. And I think
so much.
Many entrepreneurs like me will rather hire a graphic artist and call it a day, which is fine. You can do
but there's
you
no
want.
Soul. There's no soul to it. There's matters. No heart to it. It's That's so it. Important. It needs to come from your heart. It needs to be you and the extensions of you. You don't need to paint like Picasso.
Right. I'm not you. I'm not you. It doesn't matter. But that's not my art. Correct. Exactly. Correct. Exactly. My friend, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much.
I can't wait to see the project. I haven't really minted a lot of projects lately. I've been so busy, but I'm really looking forward to yours and I'm really happy you're on the show. And I hope we've motivated some entrepreneurs and artists to think about things from a different way.
Thank you. Thank you Cheers, so much, Roy. Gary. I love you. Ciao.
Love you more.